Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to PWT Talks NXT. This is September 6th, 2022, as we exit Worlds Collide and get into the new meat of things. A show with lots of wrestling minutes, and they showed us all of them, which is odd. Normally, they pay to do the split screen for the opener and the main event. This time it happened in every match that went to commercial, which was five of the six. So yes, six matches tonight, 57 minutes and 30 seconds of wrestling. To put that in perspective, it's a lot. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or on spookymilk.games. The main event tonight, Tyler Bate and Bron Breakker versus Joe Coffey and Mark Coffey. Usually, the tag team that's featured in Gallus is Mark Coffey and Wolfgang, but they have not really spent a lot of time showing us Joe Coffey, which really they need to do because he's awesome. So they had Joe Coffey in this match. Gallus, of course, did have to take the L here because we're working towards something with Bate and Breakker. That's something probably being a rematch. But this rematch may be a triple threat. We will see. And triple threat, I mean, these are the key to getting championships off really strong champions. JD McDonagh shows up after this. Tyler Bate finishes Mark Coffey with the Tyler Driver 97 in 10 minutes and 51 seconds. JD McDonagh gets into it. He's already had a match earlier in the night, a defeat of Wes Lee that went 9:36. When he won with the Devil Inside, which is still the name of his finisher. Used to be a play on his name, Jordan Devlin, and it was Devil Inside. Now just the Devil Inside, 9 minutes, 36 seconds. He beat Wes Lee in the second match of the night. So you got Bate and Breakker not splitting tonight yet, and you got Gallus taking another L on NXT TV. And I guess I'll start with Nate because he's not muted anyway.
What do you mean I'm not mute? I was mute? Seriously?
You're just usually muted in general.
Right.
Huh.
So there you go.
I was just
hearing a lot of stuff on my end, and I assumed that it was you.
Well, I mean, it shouldn't have been because the hardware mute light on my microphone was on, so that's kind of weird and kind of scary too, because I use this headset for work. Anyway, I'm Nate Lindberg, and you can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg, and I do the hits and misses for NXT, and I do have one up for tonight for this show. So yeah, Tyler Bate and Bron Breakker versus Gallus. It was a fun match. I was expecting Gallus to lose simply because they're going up against Bron Breakker and Tyler Bate, unless there was some sort of a shenanigan, or something like that, but I did not expect Gallus to win cleanly or anything like that. I definitely kind of figured there was going to be the outcome that we got. What I did like about this is they gave Tyler Bate some time to shine. He did lose at Worlds Collide. He lost his, he lost his title, which is obviously unified with Bron Breakker's. So they gave him some time to shine tonight. Bron Breakker started the match off and kind of like they built a little, to a little bit of a moment where for him to get him as in Tyler Bate to get the tag. He also got the pinfall tonight and picked up the win. So I thought that was kind of at least a nice little nod. Yeah, you might have lost your title, but at least you look good on TV the next, the next week, but a few days later anyway. I definitely like that. With JD Devlin. With JD McDonagh, I do kind of like the addition of him. I like this character that he has, this masochistic, just crazy character he's got going on. I think it's going to work as a top heel personally. And inserting him in this kind of in this way into this feud, I think is a great idea. It makes sense because he was just feuding with Bron Breakker for the title. So, and especially with the way the finish to that match happened, with him just kind of, lying down and taking the pin after getting beaten to crap. I think it kind of makes sense a little bit there too. Either way they go, whether it's triple threat or an actual like match itself between the two of them, just singles, one-on-one, I'd be okay with. But I think with the direction we saw tonight, we are going to wind up seeing a triple threat for the title at the next premium live event or mini premium live event.
Bruce?
I am Bruce Hazelwood. Aloha from Honolulu, everybody. I'm still trying to recover from two things. One, it was that they threw me off with having Joe Coffey in the match instead of Wolfgang, so I have to go back and change that in my report real quick. And two, Nate said, let's get this roared on the show, and I still don't know if my brain has mentally, put that together in any sort of fashion. So I'm still
I said that off air, and I said that on purpose, just FYI.
I know, but it's still throwing me because it's you, Nate, so it's just throwing me. With this main event, in our chat and then in my report, immediately after the opening segment, I said this is going to lead to Breaker and Bate in a singles match, a rematch for the title. They just wanted to have Breaker unify the titles, and then they have Bate as the person that could take it off of him. And that really was signaled to me because of not only how well his promo was delivered in that opening segment, but how well the fans received Bate as this ultra babyface, I guess, for lack of a better term. And I feel like when Breaker came out to help him, there wasn't that big of a reaction to Breaker as the savior. So in that case, when you're looking at the, I said this about Zoe Stark last time too, that the fan reaction would lead me to make the change and have her be the one to beat Mandy Rose, but that didn't happen. But I think here it's more realistic with Tyler Bate because he does have, as he said, he's the first and last NXT UK champion. And to Nate's point, he got a lot of time in this match, not just shine, but he was the one that took the long heat segment. And so it gave him a chance to show everyone who might not be familiar with him sort of that resilience, that determination, that determined side of him, the one that doesn't care. He's a big, strong boy, but because of his size, a lot of people might not believe that. So while he may do those power moves, also showing that resilience against bigger, stronger men is going to make him come off as more endearing and more of that that baby face that is going to be the person that I believe at this point is going to be the one to take the title off of Breaker. Because when we get to Hay later, I think they signaled that he won't be holding on to his title longer as well. But the match was fine. I think the thing that hurts Gallus a bit is their style is definitely something that is hindered by having a commercial break in between the match. If you just watch them and there's no breaks, then it's easier to get into the psychology of the match. But I think because their style is a bit more methodical than others, having that commercial kind of detracts a bit from what it would have been, I think, a better match. Again, I watch the USA player, so I don't get the split screen. I get actual commercials. So I'm not able to see everything. And so from my perspective and those watching online, that's kind of a bummer in this case, because if you watch Gallus and NXT UK, especially on the network and there really wasn't any commercials, they did really well and they had good matches. Joe Coffey is, he's good. He's different in that he's a stockier build, but he's also very strong. Kind of like, who was I just thinking about? I guess Samoa Joe in a certain sense, a smaller version of Samoa Joe, in that they're both stocky and they do a lot of power moves. And they're good in that case. I think that Gallus might be done here, so I'm not as confident of a triple threat match. Or Gallus might be done with these two, I should say, so I'm not as confident in a triple threat match. But I do think that eventually Joe Coffey is going to be one of those heels that is either the gatekeeper or will challenge at a sort of PLE light for an NXT championship or something. So that's what to keep an eye on. With Breaker and Bate, I just feel like the eventual end game is one of them kind of turning on the other or making that challenge after a while. And it's a way to keep Bate from pinning and defeating other singles wrestlers while he can still be associated with and in the title picture and then eventually be the number one contender.
All right, that number you can call us is 515-605-9345. We got a bunch of listeners, but nobody who's looking to actually jump on and ask us questions, which is fine. Means faster show. You know what? It's we win either way, folks. You can also email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com, and we do have one of those, and we will cover that at the end of the show. Might as well go to J.D. McDonough beating Wes Lee in 9:36. I don't know if there's much more to cover here. This kind of got – Wes had a pretty decent promo, I thought, at worlds collide to finish setting this up. And pretty straightforward stuff here. McDonough wins with the Devil Inside. Bruce, anything to add on this?
Good match.
Yeah.
Yeah, agreed. I guess that's about it.
Nate?
Good match.
All righty. You know, it is sometimes.
That's all there is to say.
It's
it
that,
match.
Yeah, I mean, like, it really was. It was, you know, it was a high-octane match. I feel like it, like, you know, lately NXT has been starting the night off with a high-octane paced match. Tonight they didn't do that. They started with Bron Breakker and Tyler Bate. And the Gallus angle, and then they went into Toxic Attraction versus Nikki A.S.H. and Doudrop, which wasn't bad, but it was certainly far from a high-octane match. So, like, this was, like, the first real, like, for me anyway, like, this was, like, the first real, real match of the night. I really enjoyed it, and I thought they put on a hell of a performance.
Yes, indeed. The opener, Nikki A.S.H. and Doudrop against Gigi Dolin and J.C. Jane. The crowd not playing along with who the babyfaces are in this match. It's as if they didn't see Worlds Collide at all. But Nikki A.S.H. and Doudrop win this one when Doudrop hits the splash and finishes off Gigi Dolin. I don't know if there's anything more to this or if Nikki and Doudrop got a win because they weren't going to win at Worlds Collide, and this is just them dropping down for this match. I really, coming out of Worlds Collide, I thought one of the most interesting hooks was which of these talents, both from NXT UK and from the main roster, are in the case of Doudrop and Nikki A.S.H., both, if you consider their history. Which of them are going to stay around and which one were there for a one and done or maybe a two and done? I am erring on the side that this is it for Doudrop and Nikki because they did not transition to anything else. But at any rate, a confident opener, 10 minutes and 46 seconds, Nate.
Yeah. So, I mean, like I said, it wasn't any sort of like high octane, crazy, you know, opening match, you know, kind of like we've had the past, I want to say at least 3 or 4 weeks, but it certainly wasn't a bad tag team match either. I do feel like the crowd was a little like muted for it. They just didn't really seem to be super into it. Like when Doudrop and Nikki A.S.H. made their entrance, like they were there for him anyway, but it was still a little bit more of a muted reaction than I expected, but they were still there for him. You know, during the match, there were so many times where like Nikki would do a move and there was just no reaction. There was just absolutely no reaction from the crowd. I feel like it was a little bit of a slow paced match. The crowd just to start the show, it didn't quite grab them. There's a way that I kind of perceived it anyway. It still really wasn't, like I said, it wasn't a bad performance at all. I kind of agree with you that this is probably going to be the end of Nikki A.S.H. and Doudrop in NXT. It's kind of weird because, like, I feel like it's the end, but usually when it's the end, they go out, you know, on their back putting somebody over. It's almost like, does this kind of continue? In a way, it's like, you know, Toxic Attraction, they're the top tag team, the women's tag team on the brand, and they just lost to a mid-card women's tag team on the main roster.
They're not champions, though, Nate.
Well, yeah, technically not. So, I mean, they're not the best, but you know what I mean. But they lost to, like, you know, a mid-card main roster champion. Now you got me all screwed up. A mid-roster women's team. So it's like, does that define them down a little bit? You know, because like obviously if they were on the same show and Toxic Attraction was like the top team and Doudrop and Nikki weren't, like, I don't know. I feel like it would drop, you know, define them down a little bit with just them winning cleanly like that. But you know how it is between the main roster and NXT. So whatever. But yeah, that's kind of really all I got to say about that. It wasn't a bad opener, but I kind of feel like they might wanted to speed things up just to try and get the crowd involved a little bit more. So it kind of seemed like they were dead, and I don't know, made it seem a little lackluster to me.
And I think part of that is Doudrop and Nikki were the faces here, and the crowd had no idea what to do with that. It's like they didn't understand that's what was happening, even though it was very, very clear that's how this was built. I don't know. It very odd. I think this is it for Doudrop and Nikki, but I wouldn't be surprised if we're nearing the end for Gigi and JC as well. Bruce, get your road on the show.
So on Sunday, I said, oh, no, they're done. They're not going to be on NXT anymore. And lo and behold, there they are tonight with the match. So who knows what the hell, if anything I say makes any sense. But to what you two are saying, I wrote in my report, it's like, what is the end goal? They've never stated what their end goal really was. And if it was the Women's Tag Team Championship, they lost that shot already. So are they going to stick around and try and work their way up the whole time? And I think there was something on Raw between the two. I didn't watch Raw last night, so I'm not sure. Between Nikki Ash and Doudrop. So there's a lot going on. The match itself, it was a perfectly fine television match, crowd aside. Because even when Nikki Ash and Doudrop made their entrances, I wrote that I wasn't sure if the fans were booing or if it was piped in or what, because it just sounded weird. You know, that crowd, we discussed it last week, Nate, but that crowd is very hit or miss with us. And I think this is one of those situations where it's just, you know, maybe the opening angle to them was too hot and then they felt let down by this match. I don't know. The other thing is, with Tossing Attraction losing here, I think you can look at it two ways. One is this puts Carter and Chance, as tainted as their victory was on Sunday, a little higher because they were able to beat the team that is not a developmental team anymore, whereas NXT is firmly developmental. So having Doudrop and Ash win here, it's like having the varsity team come back and beat up on a JV team kind of thing, you know? And so... Yeah, I don't know if they lose too much here. They were in the tag team championship tournament. They're probably going to be there soon. I really think it depends on Mandy Rose's championship reign and when that ends, that they'll move. But for right now, I'm not sure what the plan is for Doudrop and Ash. And if this really was just going to be their last time here, then what was the point of having them win? So with that, I'm assuming they're going to be around a little longer. I just don't know what else they do.
Yeah, I think this is it for them. And I think that winning is because they are a main roster talent and they don't want to go out on their backs. Same thing they did with the War Raiders. They had them win when they were about to finish their little excursion as well. And I think the rules are different for those main roster talents who, in the beginning of NXT, in the network era, that was how it went. When they came down, sometimes they would lose a first match, but they would almost always win on their way out, these main roster talents. So I think that this was just a quick drop in from them, but I said that a couple times, so I can move on. Mid-show main event is Roxanne Perez versus Mako Satomura. This was the best match on the show, 11 minutes and 19 seconds. All I said was Roxanne does look like she's fighting to keep up with Mako Satomura, but you know that's going to happen. She is very, very good, is Ms. Satomura. But Mako wins this at 11:19. And I don't know. Okay, so Cora Jade's involved in this, kind of. Early on, they did a scene where Satomura and Perez are finishing a conversation. Then Perez, and they shake hands, and Perez walks away. Cora Jade walks up to Satomura and is demanding a match. Satomura says she can't accept. Jade says, I understand you're scared and all this. All the stuff that was written works on the page. With Jade, some of it lands and some of it doesn't. But it used to be all of it didn't. So we're getting somewhere, I guess. I want her to put it together on the mic so badly. Anyway, Jade shows up after this match is over. Yes. What did she do? Yes, you'd think she's going to come out and attack during the match, but that did not happen. They had their clean finish, and then she sucker-fatted Roxanne Perez in the back, and Satomura came to her aid quickly, and Cora Jade skinned out. So, on your mid-show main event, Bruce?
Easily the best match of the night, my favorite match of the night. I like how, going into the match, commentary really put over how Roxanne Perez was taking deep breaths to collect herself because she was facing off with the Legends. They say she looked petrified. When I looked at her eyes, she kind of looked like she was shocked to be in there with Satomura. And the match was good. I said the thing about this match, yes, you could definitely see the spots of inexperience from Perez, where that little bit is what kept her pace from being from her matching the pace of Satomura at times. And that's fine, but because you could see that it's getting there and you could see everything else was clicking. What I said that this match did a good job of was it forced Perez to have to be more aggressive, more stiff than she usually is during her matches. It wasn't very flowy and fluid and full of, you know, flips and dives and things like that. There was a lot of kicks and forearms and just stiff strikes from Satomura, which then necessitated a response from Perez. And for Perez, I think I wrote that working with Satomura is going to be a good way for her to learn how to be a babyface that also has an edge, because it's going to be hard for her to be accepted as a heel of any kind right now. And as a babyface, she needs to have more of an aggressive edge to her. And I think this is a good way to develop that. Cora Jade in the backstage segment from over the weekend as a digital exclusive, they said she had that smarmy, like, I'm asking you for a match, but I'm actually demanding you for a match attitude, which you think would work well. But I wrote that her acting was really bad up until the very end when she reacted to Satomura walking away saying she can't accept her challenge. It was that kind of spoiled girl reaction that Tiffany Stratton does so well. Cora Jade did that pretty well at the end. But other than that, it wasn't very good. Like you said, at least they saved the shenanigans for after the match, which was clean, good match. I think what they're going to do here is definitely have the match with Satomura and Jade, and I wonder if this is what becomes a triple threat match eventually for the number one contendership to Mandy Rose.
Nate, shades of Tyler Breeze versus Jushin Liger was kind of what I was thinking throughout the course of this match. You've got the Japanese legend coming back to, you know, or coming to NXT to work with, you know, a young up-and-comer. Granted, you know, Jushin Liger wasn't necessarily part of NXT. It was a one-off, and Mako Satomura is on the roster. But kind of same thing. Like, that was immediately, like, what went through my mind when this match kind of kicked off. And I agree. I think it was easily match of the night. This was, and I also think that the crowd had no idea what they were watching, because there was a lot of times where this crowd just seemed very muted and quiet for this match, where, like, again, like, this is like really, this cool is Mako Satomura in NXT fighting, like, the old guard fighting the new guard, you know, a little bit of a passing of the torch. Granted, you know, obviously it wasn't necessarily passing the torch because Perez didn't get the win, but there was all that sign of respect at the end. You know, when Cora Jade attacked during that sign of respect, you know, but still, regardless, it was there. But yeah, overall, I thought this was great. I thought it was a great way to kind of propel Roxanne Perez a little bit, and get her to rub elbows with, you know, somebody like Mako Satomura. And I agree with, I think it was Bruce was talking about this. It forced her to change her style a little bit. You know, wasn't nearly, it didn't seem nearly as, like, rehearsed and fluid. It seemed like a little bit more of a fight. And I really like it. I think this may have been Perez's best match in NXT. Actually, I think it was her best match in NXT. So yeah, I don't have anything else to really add that you guys haven't already said, or I haven't already said, but yeah, hands down, match of the night for me too.
It's hard not to have your best match with Satomura. Just ask Mandy Rose on Sunday.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, that was a fantastic match.
All right. So we did have a caller drop in from 914. While we started talking about that match, I'm like 60% sure this is Sean, but my memory is not so great as I continue to age. It happens, folks. It'll happen to you. 914, I just unmuted you. Go ahead and say hey.
Well, the 40% wins because this is Brad in New York. How are you guys?
Oh, I'm so sorry, Brad. That's why I hedged and dropped from 70 to 60 at the last minute. I'm doing all right, Brad. How are you?
Good, guys. Okay, a couple of things that I wanted to just talk about this show. First of all, this wasn't the best NXT show after, you know, we had a few really good weeks of it, in my opinion, with the pay-per-view and, you know, the go-home show, and even the week before that I thought were really good. This week was very blah to me, but a couple just observations that I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on. Number one, I thought that Trick Williams actually wrestled very good tonight. I really thought he looked good in the ring, like the best I've ever seen him. Now, maybe that's a byproduct of wrestling Ricochet, but like some of his selling, one move in particular where he really flopped, like, you know, kind of like the way Austin Theory did when he got hit by the stunner by Steve Austin, like really, you know, selling pretty good. And I was wondering if that was a main roster debut potentially for Trick Williams, with him potentially getting called up as Carmelo's sidekick. Not sure if that's why he was wrestling Ricochet or the point of it. Similarly, I was wondering if Nikki and Doudrop, if that was kind of another audition for Toxic Attraction to potentially come up to the main roster. And obviously you guys noticed that Doudrop's nose was bleeding pretty bad at the end of that match. I assume that was from that kick in the face from JC Jane that happened when she was breaking up a pinfall. But I was wondering what you thought of both of those points. And then I had one more quick thing to say.
Okay. Yeah. So it's kind of nice for this company to have NXT for these kind of tryout matches, because they don't have to bother making them the dark matches at Raw or SmackDown and going on the road. They can just keep the talent at the PC and work a tryout match there. That definitely has occurred to me with Williams, and I suppose that makes sense for Dolan and Jane too, because the only thing holding me back from saying that Dolan and Jane are on the fast track to the main roster now is the fact that Mandy has a championship, and I don't think they should be split up. The same exact thing goes for Trick and Mello, because I feel like this act needs to stay together. For a while, I said, okay, these two are nice together, but Hayes is going to be fine without him, and Trick can continue to learn, and if they ever cross paths again, fine. If they don't, fine. But I just feel like these two have really got sort of a magical charisma here that's even more than the sum of its parts, just the way that Trick is a hype man, but is kind of a bastard too. I want to see these two stick together also. And I would expect all of these talents, all six of them, to be moving up, all five of them to be moving up. if they didn't have championships that they would need to vacate. I too have been noticing the upgraded Trick in the ring and on the mic. On the mic, he was always ahead of where he was in the ring. And on the mic, he didn't start out too bad at all. He was kind of had a head start on a lot of the other talent that were not on TV. But his first couple TV matches were really, really basic offense, and he didn't really show a lot there. But he just has of late. So I've noticed that too. I would kind of agree with you on those points that this could be tryout matches. I also would fairly strongly agree on this being a fairly blah show. Wrestling was decent to above decent, but it just felt, I'm going to say, inconsequential. Not every show has to be loaded like it was a couple of weeks ago when I just thought, man, this is one of the best weekly TVs I've seen in a long time. But I thought this was a pretty easily forgettable episode, Bruce.
Yeah, but sometimes you need to have your A to B episodes, and this was one of those. I did note that I wonder if the one-year anniversary crept up on them a little bit, because you would think something like that would get more hype than just one week out. But they did a good job of making next week's show feel like it's going to be kind of a PLE light almost. So I think that's where a lot of the focus went. Although I do think tonight, coming off the pay-per-view, it wasn't by number sometimes. They did that tonight. They advanced some stories. They started new ones. They built off of what happened on Sunday, especially with the major title. So I think that was well done. They had a through line throughout the show with the tag team championships, which we can get to later. But on Hayes, so Toxic Attraction, I don't think they're moving unless Mandy Rose loses her title. They need to go up together, or I fear for Toxic Attraction, the tag team, getting lost and sort of having what happened to like Shotzi and Ember Moon and Toni Storm. Just look at people from the last year or so on the main roster. And so I think when they do go up, they need to go up as a faction, because one thing that is kind of missing a lot, they have tag teams, but there aren't, there was that moment in time around 2016 or so, 2015 or something, when you had three or four women's factions on Raw and SmackDown, and kind of missing that kind of that act aside from Damage Control in on Raw and SmackDown. So I think they need to go up as a group. Then you look at Hayes and Williams. I also agree they need to go up as a duo, but I do think that's going to happen sooner than later. Even though I've been advocating for Hayes to become champ and whatnot. And that's because specifically of Wade Barrett tonight. Not during this match. The match was fine. Trick Williams has definitely improved. I think the best part of the match was Carmelo Hayes on commentary, especially towards the end when he's like, oh, hey, we've been practicing this. Watch, he's got to move. He's got to miss it. And then when the Shooting Star Press hit, he just looked like he was sitting there in shock, like, how'd he hit that? He practiced that. But the thing with Wade Barrett later is after Mackenzie Mitchell talked to Hayes in the back, and I think Mackenzie Mitchell was fantastic again tonight, when she brought up the fact that he's going to have a match next week and that the fans get to decide. And he said, no, only I get to decide on who faces me. And she said, well, you can vote. And I thought that was the line of the night, just how deadpan she was. They just reacted in anger to her. She just threw her hands up. So that was good. But after that, Wade Barrett emphatically said, we know what's going to happen next week. Carmelo Hayes is going to win. And I'm like, usually when that kind of stuff happens with the announcers, they're trying to signal that he's not going to win next week. I think they have the out with the fans choosing the opponent, even though I do think it's going to be set up for Ricochet to be the opponent as sort of a last minute for Hayes. Like, he couldn't really game plan for anybody, that sort of storyline. So we might see Hayes lose next week, whoever he faces, unless it's just some kind of rigged fan vote where they bring in someone like Hank Williams or something, who's already scheduled for a fight with Big Body Hobby next week. You know what I'm trying to say.
Is it Hank Williams? As in,
well, whatever.
They just took the name from the country. Yeah, I think it's Hank.
I don't.
Something else. But
something, whatever.
I hope they tried a little harder than Williams.
Yeah, he just looks like someone who will be a Hank Williams and also Seth Rollins' cousin.
Okay. Nate.
So, all right, Trick Williams, I agree. I thought tonight was probably his best performance as well. And I don't know, again, that, well, obviously that's probably partly because of Ricochet, as Brad said a little bit ago. But, you know, he has been improving in the ring. As Kelly said, he was always a step ahead on the mic, and his in-ring work was okay. But he's definitely improving. And I noticed that tonight, he was selling really well. His bumps looked like, I mean, his bumps looked really, really good. Overall, I think Trick is like, Trick comes across to me as like, he's not like the Marty Jannetty of the team. Like, he is in a way, because obviously, the other person on his team is Carmelo Hayes. But like, I feel like even on his own, like if all of a sudden, like, Carmelo Hayes just, I don't know, was erased from history. Like,
how
Trick Williams, I know, I'm just saying, I don't want that reality. Believe me, I don't. But, if it was to happen, I mean, that hell, things like that happen to WWE all the time. If somebody just, gets fired and they're gone, I'm not saying that's going to happen to him. I don't think so anyway, but I think he's got a lot of upside for company unless, he does something stupid. I think he's going to be around for a little bit. But Trick Williams, I feel like he could hold his own, and he'd still be able to be, somewhat of a star on his own, even if he wasn't with. But as Kelly said, the sum of the parts are greater, and they are like just as a team together. I mean, it's so charismatic, so entertaining. So yeah, I think that's a main roster call up. As a main roster call up, you've got to keep them together. And I think Triple H will see that. If you know, Vince was still in the reins, I don't know if that would happen. But I think Triple H rather can certainly see something like that. I know there was another point and I totally forget what it was.
Okay. Well, maybe you'll think of it later.
No. I meant like, I thought Brad had another point to talk about.
Yeah. Attraction.
Dewdrop
and Toxic. So I'm not sure. I mean, it makes sense. It could have been like a tryout match for them, especially where Toxic Attraction was supposed to be in that tournament, the WWE Tag Team Tournament, for the women's tag team titles, and then they got pulled out. So it makes sense that it could have been some sort of a, you know, something like that. But I haven't heard anything in particular if that was it or not. So I can't say one way or another, but it honestly wouldn't surprise me if it was.
Yeah, Vince needed these because he, I feel, probably hadn't really seen the talent that he was about to decide whether he was going to call up or not. But a lot of this, and this is straight from the mouths of some people who have been in these matches, is that a fairly large amount of power is given to the main roster talent in these cases, because a large part of the assessment is what was it like to work with them? Can they really dance, or did you lead this thing completely? So a lot of it is that as well. Brad, I'm going to throw back to you. And then after that, we got another call in the 310 area code.
Yeah. So I'll be quick, but I did have two other things. Tony D'Angelo, you know, was doing that thing with Cameron Grimes backstage. And he said to him something like, you know, the last two people who did this, they're not here anymore. I'm wondering if you guys think that's leading clearly, obviously, to a Tony D'Angelo, Cameron Grimes match, but maybe a loser leaves town type of match where Tony now dispatches Cameron Grimes to the main roster. That's just what I was thinking when I was hearing it. And I do think Cameron's kind of, you know, due for that. And I think Triple H probably likes him. And I like him. And the other thing was just on the voting that you guys mentioned, that, you know, they were giving you this whole thing throughout the show of voting on the matches and the stipulations. Was there ever any sort of place that it says you can go as a fan? Like, you would think there would be some, you know, QR code. I mean, there was nothing. So I'm looking around. I went on WWE's website, and I really don't think the voting is going to be real anyway. I think they'll just say, oh, Ricochet won it with 48% of the vote or whatever, but, you know, for the match against Carmelo or whatever. But I still would like to see where you do that. I guess the answer is no. But, yeah, I'll let you get to your other caller. But I was curious what you thought of the Cameron Grimes, if he's going to potentially have a loser leave town type of match where, you know, Tony seems to be dispatching people one by one from the roster, you know, which is kind of an interesting thing, almost like a hitman, you know. So I think that's kind of a cool concept to keep going with.
Yeah, the voting for the stipulation feels very 1980s wrestling, where they say there's all this voting going on and you literally can't figure out how to do it. A little easier to get away with in the days of big kayfabe and no social media. But I felt that exact thing. I remember when I was a kid watching this and they'd say, well, this guy's picking up wins all over the country when they were talking about a jobber, and you knew that was not happening. And, there was another trick that I was thinking of. Just saying that news outlets have been picking up this story, and it'd be like an angle. And I was like, I've never heard any news outlet talk about this, but whatever. Tony D, you know, I felt Tony D sitting there drinking tiny coffees with stacks. So much work was done to legitimize Tony D'Angelo from what I thought was a pretty tough position, because in the ring I find him dull. I was going to say dreadful but I just mean dreadfully dull. It's very, very straightforward stuff with him. You know what you're going to get. But I thought they had really done enough character work with him to make him a semi-fearsome Don. And then he just kind of got bitched out by Legato, and now he's drinking tiny coffees and joking at Pretty Deadly's expense. It just feels like very quickly he has plummeted. The question was about Tony D, but about Cameron Grimes. Yes. Obviously this is working toward a feud with the two. But I don't know. I would love to make a claim about when Cameron Grimes is going to move up, but as Bruce and I joke about often, we've been saying he's going to move up for like 2 years, and that hasn't happened, Bruce.
Every week for 2 years, basically.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I remember saying it like two years ago, yeah.
Yeah, it's so here's the thing about the D'Angelo segment as well. It's those people that left weren't because he necessarily did anything, right? Dimes just was released, and they worked it into that he messed up with the family somehow. But then Legato specifically, they left on their own accord. Like, they just got in the SUV and drove away. And if it was that easy, then why doesn't everybody just leave Full Sail like that? But I digress. So that makes it a bit what's the word?
Well, he also got rid of Tommaso Ciampa, if you remember. Tommaso Ciampa as well.
I assumed he was talking about Ciampa and O'Reilly.
Oh, and not about the more recent people. Okay. Yeah. Well, he wasn't
O'Reilly. That was Von Wagner.
He was Pete Dunne's last match.
Pete Dunne, yes. Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
So, okay. Well, I guess that makes sense when you think about Cameron Grimes saying those people are also respected, those two, as opposed to Tony D'Angelo. And I think there's more respect for Ciampa and Dunne than for Dimes and Legato, Santos. There's definitely respect there. So that's weird. Grimes, I mean, you could do a loser leaves town and have him leave, but I'm honestly more inclined to think that if they did that, they would have D'Angelo move up with Stacks and have another mid-card heel on Raw. So that's just how I think WWE looks at these things, because there are people who we looked at like, oh, they're going to be on NXT a little longer because they need more seasoning. And then they move up long before we think they're ready. Like Elias and Baron Corbin, for example, went up a lot quicker than I ever thought they would. I guess it took them a while, but it worked out for them. I think they still would have been better off if they were in NXT a little longer than they were. When I look at Grimes, it doesn't make any sense anymore for us to make predictions on what he's going to be called up, because we've been wrong literally every week just for 2 years. And in that case, yeah, I don't really want to say anything more other than I think Grimes can pull out a decent to good match from D'Angelo. I do think D'Angelo has gotten better, specifically when he starts using his amateur wrestling background more to be sort of that nasty heel who will take you down and then rub his forearm in your face. He needs to do more of that stuff for his heel gimmick to work better. And what was the second part of his question?
It was more just an observation on the fake voting.
Oh, right. So the voting. So they can do it like, you know, Taboo Tuesday also happened Cyber Sunday not too long ago, what, 15 years ago, something like that. They might do Twitter polls during the show and say, go to Twitter right now and vote on who Carmelo Hayes will face. Vote on the stipulation for the Creed Brothers versus Pretty Deadly. They might do it that way and might have their own people rigging the vote somehow. But that might give more legitimacy to it, because I don't think they can say that and not have any sort of voting apparatus set up for the fans to actually vote, unless they come on air and they say some BS like the Full Sail Universe or the WWE Universe at Full Sail University, they voted on everything before they entered the arena, and these are this whatever, you know, they could do something like that. And in that case, whatever. I do think, though, that with how everything is now, they need to have a better effort in trying to make it look more kayfabe legit than they have in the past.
All right. We nailed it both. I got to you both, right? Nate, I got you.
No, you didn't, but that, you know.
Okay. Well, here you are. Go ahead.
I'm here. So why not? Let's do this thing. So as far as the voting goes, yeah, I mean, who knows how they're going to do it. And as far as I'm aware, like, I haven't seen anything either. I was kind of taking a quick look around myself earlier tonight. And then, yeah, with you know, Cameron Grimes, I mean, I agree with everything you guys have already said. We've been talking about him going to the main roster for years at this point. Yeah, I mean, it's coming up on 3 years I've been on this show now, and I think we've been talking about it for almost the entire time. Like, so yeah, I think that's kind of coming sooner rather than later. Yeah, I could keep rambling, but I think I just probably rehash a lot of what you guys already said.
Cool. Well, we thank you, Brad, and we are going to go to 310. There's a less than 40% chance I'll remember your number less next time, but it's more than zero. All right. Cheers, and we thank you for the call. Okay, let us go to 310, and if you are unmuted, go ahead and say hey.
Hey, guys, it is Tom. How are you doing?
Doing all right, Tom. How are you?
I am doing well. I'm just tuning in. I assume I missed the conversation about Punk or everything going on there. Have you guys not really started chatting about that yet?
Well, this is the NXT show, so we're not going to cover Punk. Like, I'm not, oh, God, we all have so many thoughts, but we're just covering NXT tonight, so no Punk chatter tonight, none is planned.
Ah, got it, okay. I normally turn into PW Torch. I admit I haven't watched NXT in a bit, so maybe I'm not the greatest guest for the show right now. Maybe I'd be the best caller, so... I could sit
all
back
right.
And listen, I guess, at that point. But,
all right.
Yeah, I won't have too much to say on the NXT topic, unfortunately.
Well, we thank you, Tom, for being here, inadvertent though it might have been. And we will talk to you another time.
Call it the Wade Show tomorrow.
That's great. You know what? I was thinking... Somehow someone's going to get us to monologue about Punk. And he said that, and I was like, I don't know if this is accidental or if he's just like, everybody has to weigh in.
Resist the temptation, Kelly.
Yes, I'm going to resist that. Even as I'm saying that, I'm like thinking of the things I would be saying if I wasn't resisting the temptation. All right, let's go to Axiom versus Nathan Fraser. This is the first of the best of three. In 11:46, Axiom beats Fraser in a match that was at least as technical as it was high flying. I think it was Bruce in the chat who said they appreciated that. They left something open for – they're probably going to have a very different style of match at least once and maybe twice in this best of three series. The only thing for me in these openers for best ofs is that it's really easy for my mind to wander and for me not to engage because I know that I'm not seeing the end of anything. That can be true in any wrestling match, but it's especially true here. I also think it's odd that we were given a best of 10 between two guys who have like a total of fewer than 10, best of three for guys who have fewer than 10 total wins between them on this brand. Honestly, I think total is probably less than that. And they can obviously work together. I'm sure they did when they were A-Kid and Nathan Fraser. But, just kind of throwing them out there cold, relatively cold, for this best of three is odd to me. But I guess we'll see how it goes. Nate?
Yeah, so I'm actually kind of I'm enjoying the best of three series so far. Like you said, it is kind of interesting, and it's tough to get into a best of three or best of series, whatever, especially the opener, because, yeah, you know you're not going to see anything crazy. You know you're not going to see, you know, the end of this feud or anything. It's just the start of it. So, but I feel like they did a really good job at keeping, you know, keeping my attention anyway. And, you know, I'm said it a million times a show. I'll say it again. I'm an ADD kid. So holding my attention is not the easiest thing to do. And sometimes in wrestling, I'll try to pay attention to something. And the next thing I know, I'm like playing a game on my phone and I don't even know how the hell that happened. So, you know, they did a good job. I didn't pick up my phone. I watched the match. I really did enjoy the technical and high-flying aspects of this match. It's something I wrote about in the hits and misses as well. It was just really well-rounded. And I keep using this phrase tonight. I don't know why I keep going back to high octane, but it really was. It was a high octane match. There was really not a dull moment in the match. If Mako Satomura and Roxanne Perez didn't happen tonight, I probably would have said this was going to be a match of the night for me. They just went out and killed it. I think Axiom picking up the win here, I think is probably a good idea, because I feel like the Axiom character just kind of needs that push right now. I feel like Nathan Frazier, just where he's this kind of, I mean, he's just a guy, right? Like he's a fighter. He's a guy. He doesn't really have a super like over the top gimmick. We don't really know too much about what his gimmick really is so far yet in NXT, whereas Axiom has, you know, it's kind of a more far-fetched gimmick. And I feel like push is kind of what he needs to, for legitimacy. So you know, whether or not he wins this best of three, I don't know. That's the, you know, I'm still not sure exactly which way this is going to land, but I'm kind of here for it. I like it. It is, you know, like you said, Kelly, it is a bit cold. But I kind of like the way they set this up last week. You know, they're just sitting backstage, sitting backstage reading WWE comics, which, you know, a lot of times when they do have like blatant brand placement like that, or they're trying to blatantly promote something, it's cheesy as all hell. And this certainly was cheesy, but it wasn't like bad cheesy either. That segment last week with the comic books. And I kind of like how they set it up, you know, just kind of talking, and the comic books were there, but they weren't like a big focus of the segment. So kind of, you know, at least were able to promote them. But the, you know, the big focus of the segment was talking, you know, how Axiom wasn't there for NXT UK. So they wanted to, like, you know, although he was as a kid, which is kind of the joke, the ha-ha, which, you know, whatever. But, you know, so, yeah, like, let's go out there and let me show you what NXT UK was all about. And so that's kind of what you know, this whole feud is. And I like that. It's you don't always have to have, like, two people hate each other, go out there and have a match. You can have a friendly, you know, friendly rivalry just to see who's the best. And it doesn't always work. You don't want to do that all the time, but in a certain circumstance, certain situation, why not? And I feel like this works. I don't know necessarily why they're giving it to these two guys, but it works. I'm actually really looking forward to the next. I'm assuming there's going to be two more matches, so I'm looking forward to the next two matches between these guys. It was really fun to watch.
Bruce, was this octane high enough for you?
The first part of the match before the commercial break was they just kept going at it. They were chaining together so many different reversals to the chain wrestling and the submissions that I honestly couldn't keep up in my report. But then when they came back from commercial, Axiom had been working the left arm, and that slowed the pace down a bit. And like you said, they started going more technical. To go after what specifically what I wrote in my report, I said it's a really good setup for the three matches, as you can't have all three just be fast-paced sprints as one might expect with these two. They fused in just enough of that to leave you excited for the ultimate match, which hopefully Kelly will be covering instead of me. So, because we know that match is going to be very, very, very high octane, to use Nate's words, and I don't want my fingers to be sore. So I want that to fall on Kelly. Hopefully that does happen, but now that I wish that into the air, it's got to fall on me. Just watch. Axiom and Nathan Frazer they're two of the fastest wrestlers in terms of just pure speed on the roster. And Nathan Frazer, when he hit that tope, he's lucky he was going so fast because his feet clipped the middle rope, and it could have gone really bad, but he still had enough force to make it to Axiom even with the clip of the ropes. And Axiom just moves around so fluidly. I really like his finisher because it's not just a super kick. It's a leaping super kick. Like you might see Goku pull off in Dragon Ball or, you know, like Bruce Lee in a movie. And it just adds a little bit extra to what has become such a commonly used move that used to be a finisher. I think it just adds a little bit extra to who he is. And correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't that segment with the comic books on Sunday during Worlds Collide and not last week?
No, it was definitely last week because I've only seen bits and pieces of Worlds Collide. And it was like match to match, not back to
segment. And I haven't seen last week. I saw like the first hour. I didn't see that at all.
Thought they aired it out Worlds Collide too. Maybe, all the days bunched together. Whatever.
Since COVID happened, it's just been one long day as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Like I said, the match itself was good. They were able to show off that side of them that people don't really associate. That's the technical side. I said the match started out in very British style with them just trading holds and chain wrestling holds and whatnot. And that's kind of an homage to them starting in NXT UK, I guess. And I think that what they can do in the second match is kind of reverse it and have all the technical stuff first and then go into a more fast-paced second half. And then the third match, the ultimate match, just go do what they do best. Basically, what would be a good comparison? Like Ricochet and Will Ospreay back in the day or something. You know, just have them do and go as fast as they can, as fluidly as possible. And that's probably going to be how the feud ends. And in that way, it raises the stock of both of them, even for the loser, because of the memorability of what will be these three matches and how they were placed and how they were laid out.
Next week is the one-year anniversary of NXT 2.0. Three matches signed, all of them tags. Pretty Deadly versus the Creeds, Tony D and Stax versus Cameron Grimes, and a secret partner. He can only be Ted DiBiase. And Zoe Stark and Nikita Lyons versus Kiana James and Ariana Grace. Thought this was a celebration, but I guess we're going to have to cover that match. I'm going to have to cover that match. Oh, man. Nikita would come back on a time when I'm definitely going to get emails from Nikita stans next week. Okay. It might be good. Pretty Deadly was in a couple of scenes this week, which is a recipe for success. One with Lash Legend, one with the Creeds and Ivy Nile, where they were talking about the WWE universe picking a stipulation. I don't need all of the sayings to go away, but WWE universe going away I would welcome that one. Apollo Crews on Grayson Waller. Grayson Waller took part of his ability to see in the future because he took part of his very literal ability to see. So this can only end in the WrestleMania 7 blindfold match. Damon Kemp did some mic work and my wife was in the room trying not to laugh. And I was like, you know, he's like the third worst person on the mic in that faction because Roddy still is who he is. And Ivy is who she is. All the stuff he said was right, but there's work to be done. The dyad was in a scene with Kiana and her receptionist, and then they talked to Ariana Grace. That stuff is so low rent. Sol Ruka is coming soon. I don't know who Sol Ruka is, but Tom does, and if you listen to Bonus Point, he can tell you all about Sol Ruka. Javier Bernal and Hank the security guard had another scene. We got a feud between two people who have never won on this show. So anything on the various backstage segments, Bruce?
So the backstage stuff. I do believe that it was just Schism in the back because I don't think Joe Gacy was back there. So that would mean there was the dyad as a whole. Sorry to round your break.
No, the other way around. Everybody.
Schism,
the dyad is two guys.
Oh,
yes.
I just heard them saying Schism, so I just wrote down
they
Schism.
They did say Schism today. That was them screwing up. Yep.
They screwed me up, those mother... Okay, so I'm also just like, why do they have a convention table in the back? It just seems weird. I know wrestling shows have their own tables, but they weren't selling. Okay, yeah, just moving on. Good luck with the match next week, Kelly. I hope you enjoy that as you cover it. between Lyons and Stark and Grace and James. let's see. The segment, it's not just that Bernal and Hank haven't had, you know, wins. I don't think Hank's ever had a match on NXT proper.
I don't think so. Tom has largely negative stuff to say about him on Bonus Point. So I don't know what we're about to step into here with him.
Like you said, Damon Kemp, he said all the right things, and he was trying. I'll give him that much. He was trying. But it still wasn't as comical as some of the bad stuff we've seen on the mic from people in NXT while I've been on the show, at least since the year began. The other backstage stuff, I don't know if you brought up the vignette for Quincy Elliott, but oh my gosh, I cannot wait for Quincy Elliott to make his debut.
I missed it. I don't know when that happened. I didn't
see it. Oh, you missed it. So it happened. Where did it happen? Oh, it happened after they came back from break following the Axiom and Nathan Fraser match. He was on the streets, and he had a bedazzled moped. And
it was
one of the best things I've ever seen. And his line was, I want to make sure I got it correctly. He said, nothing is cuter than a boy on his scooter. And he's bringing all that to NXT, and he debuts next week. And I am just very excited for Quincy Elliott. He is definitely something different, something new to NXT. He has that charisma and the personality already. I haven't seen his matches on Level Up, so I can't say anything about his in-ring work, but I haven't been this excited about a character debut in NXT in a long time. So I'm looking forward to that. I think Julius tonight, in response to Pretty Deadly and everything that Pretty Deadly was doing, I think he said it perfectly. Everything that's been going on the last couple of weeks, all the anger I built up, I'm taking on your bitch asses next week. I think, and he didn't over exaggerate. He didn't yell. He just kind of said it with ferocity, but in an even tone that made it seem even more menacing to me in a certain way. So I think Julius is still a standout. Brutus still relies on yelling a lot, kind of like Ron Breaker. But Julius, I think, is going to be someone that we definitely are keeping our eye on because he's going to get a rocket strap trip sooner than later. And Pretty Deadly is arrogant enough to think and narcissistic enough to think that people not talking about them and talking about the implosion of Diamond Mine means that their victory is somehow tainted. And they're the ones that go out and make the challenge, even though that probably puts them in a disadvantage. So I just thought that was well played with the writing tonight between these two teams.
Nate?
All right. So let's see. There was a lot of things that happened, and, like, of course, I can't think of anything, any of them off the top of my head now. The Kiana James backstage segment, that was just kind of strange. I don't know why that's the first thing that popped into my head. I don't know. Give me something, because I'm running on hopes.
I mean, you're
right.
That was very strange. I don't know what else to say about their stuff. Javier Bernal and Hank, they had their
The only thing I really get to say about that hasn't already been said is the fact that I love the fact the security guard's name is Hank because I'm a giant fan of The Office. That's all.
Okay. And then the other one is Damon Kemp, I guess, is the other big one.
Yeah, Damon Kemp. I mean, like the context, like you guys are saying, the context of what he was saying was valid, and I mean, it was good. But yeah, he needs some work. He needs some work, you know, on the mic. You know, his cadence, his inflection. You know, working with some sort of like an acting coach would be great. I know they obviously have like acting coaches and I don't know if they call them acting coaches, but I mean, they've got like, you know, promo classes and things like that down at the PC. But I mean, if I was him, I might consider trying to get like even a private acting coach or something like that, honestly. Actually, I could say that for a lot of people down in NXT, really. But, you know, wrestling, it doesn't have to be perfect acting, I guess. But I am really looking forward to see what happens with Damon Kemp over the next couple of years, because I don't feel like he's going to be with Diamond Mine forever. I don't feel like Diamond Mine is going to be around forever, first of all, for him to be with them. but I don't feel like he's going to be a tag guy forever. I think he's finally going to, you know, once he kind of gets a little bit more experience under his belt, I could see him going off and having a halfway decent singles run. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he does. Hit me with another segment, unless there's nothing else important.
I mean, that's the important stuff.
That works pretty deadly, me. Pretty deadly throughout the show, I guess, if you want to touch on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, pretty deadly. As far as I'm concerned, like, they are just such a perfect finished product right now. I love their in-ring work. I love their gimmick. I love the way they interact with one another. Their chemistry together is fantastic. Their mannerisms, the over-the-top flamboyant mannerisms, have like completely won me over from day one. So you know, seeing them kind of try to claw their way back and become champions again, I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to that, and I think it's gonna make for some good TV. But yeah, other than that, I don't think I have anything more to say that hasn't already been said.
We got two emails. This one's from Brian Alston. I really liked Worlds Collide. No match disappointed me. I'm happy that Mandy Rose won. I've always been a rosebud. Oh, for those of you that hate on Mandy, you are lemons. Then call me.
He should be banned from the
mailbag
for a bit.
He probably should. After talking with someone, I realized we're coming up on the 5-year anniversary of the first Mae Young Classic final match, September
12, 2017.
Time flies. Wow. Regarding the post-PLE roundtable, Bruce, Kelly, and Kevin did good work, and Kelly was in the middle of a doctor sandwich, which is great because I love yelling out PhD the way I do. It's my thing, gang, and I got to do it twice. Kelly said banger twice. Banger has been overused by wrestling journalists, and now it's the word that the drunk uncle learned from the young people and keeps on saying banger, trying to be cool. I have been saying that word for like 15 years, since before it was cool. And now that it's not cool, I'm going to continue to not be cool.
This has been a major topic on the fix between Wade and Todd, the use of the word banger. Yes. It's been like a weeks-long discussion of them discussing the word banger.
By the way, I'm occasionally drunk, and I am an uncle, so there you go. When talking about how great the Steiner men are, Kelly got the views of Kelly Wells represent Kelly Wells alone and do not necessarily reflect the views of Pro Wrestling Torch. Statement. At the end, Bruce mentioned his favorite takeover match was Fatal 4-Way. It was right there for Kelly to introduce and remind
my favorite
listeners.
Favorite takeover match, Brian.
That
Fatal 4-Way match.
Right. Right. That Tom and Staup and he are reviewing TakeOver on the September 10th edition of 8 Years Back podcast. I was indeed going to mention that, and by the time there was an opening, I didn't think to mention it. While I agree that Brooks Jensen needs a lot of ring time, that is what NXT 2.0 is supposed to be for. I do not think the TakeOver name is coming back, and it should not. Time to move on. I actually think it should not. I was just wondering if it is. I think NXT is going to do with UK belt similar to what they did with the Cruiserweight belt. It disappears.
Not tonight, though.
Nope, not tonight. I'm expecting a redesign that maybe they use elements of both, like subtle elements of both. I guess I'm expecting a redesign.
So I'm thinking there is going to be a redesign. I'm kind of a little bit of a belt geek, and I follow belt fan Dan quite a bit, and I know he was talking about Triple H, you know, talking about redesigning quite a few titles. So I think we're going to see quite a few title redesigns across NXT and WWE coming up soon.
He finishes, don't forget to listen to VIP exclusive Torch podcast 8 years back. As mentioned this Saturday, Kelly and Tom review all 6 matches on Fatal 4-Way. In addition, I bring up a topic that is still relevant today. Thanks, Brian Alston. Yes, indeed. I am recording that tomorrow morning, so I've got to watch that show tonight. And Kevin Cantani emails us this. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. I thought tonight was a solid post-PLE show. I love that we got to see Mako and Gallus again. I do hope they stick around for a few weeks at the very least. On top of all that, I am really digging the Breaker Bait tag team and love to see those two hosses continue this team up for a run. Yeah, it's a run towards another match between the two. Now that we've seen the NXT UK folks 2 shows in a row, who do you think is most likely to stick around for a bit and who is heading back across the pond? Thanks as always. Go VIP and listen to 8YB. Office hours are now over. The professor, Kevin P. Catani, PhD. I think they're all hanging around, the ones that are there, unless their contracts are expiring. Because there is nowhere to go over the pond. NXT UK is done. They're not doing any more shows. They are gearing up for NXT Europe. Some of these talents might end up there, but in the meantime, this gets them reps and perhaps, you know, best case scenario, potentially for them. I can't speak for them, but they end up on the main roster and doing that over here. Mako's not going to wrestle forever. She's 41, so she might be nearing the end. That is much longer than most Japanese women wrestle, much longer. There are exceptions that are extreme, but many of them retire in their 20s. As for Gallus, I think that they really provide a nice heel gatekeeper faction right now on NXT US. I think that they are going to be around for a while. I just hope that they don't have to do a whole bunch of jobs before they see any kind of push. Bruce.
Yeah. I think I'm going to agree with you, now that you say it, that the belts are probably going to have a fusion design for these unified ones. And the I'm not sure about the women's tag team title, if there will be any sort of change with that for NXT, because I think those were recently redesigned as well. But yeah, by the way, am I being too hyperbolic when I say that's my favorite Fatal 4-Way match, or is that, because
it's mine too.
Okay. Yeah. It's just, it was so good. It was just laid out so perfectly. I feel sorry you have to stay up to watch that, the whole event, but at least we'll end up the Fatal 4-Way match. That's good. Remind me again of what else was in the email that Kevin wanted us to cover.
He mostly just wants to know what we think about the NXT UK folks that are doing this US duty right now. Do we think they're sticking around?
Sure. So I think the ones you saw on Worlds Collide and the ones you saw tonight for sure are going to stick around longer. Now it's going to be a matter of who they decide to keep over here, or bring over here, I guess, from UK, and who they want to leave over there for the launch of NXT Europe. We know some people like Flash Morgan Webster Mark Andrews are gone. There are some others that are gone, but you still have people like, I think Ginny's under contract. She'd be a great addition to NXT if she was to be added stateside because of her act and just her skill overall. Yeah, people like Isla Dawn and others over
and
there.
She's Jamiri Gunter, so you know she wants to come over.
Right. That's true. That's true. Mm-hmm. Talk about if Gunter was NXT alum Braun Strowman almost looked like Gunter last night with the red pants and the Gunter with the red tights. But that's just an observation. Braun Strowman lost a lot of weight. My goodness. So core people that you saw, Mako Satomura. I'm assuming Blair Davenport is going to be in that group as well. And then Gallus, Pretty Deadly. I think they're – and Nathan Fraser, Axiom. I think they're going to be here to stay. I can't – again, we're not sure exactly when NXT Europe is going to launch and how it's going to kind of look. But I assume that they're going to keep a good number of the people that they had under contract for UK over there. And maybe – because they need to still have enough star power at the top to kind of keep that brand going. But I could also see them bringing in some of the other acts just because there is the space in NXT after all the releases that happened during the pandemic years since March of 2020, I believe. So, yeah.
Nate?
Yeah, so I kind of think it's very similar to what you guys are saying. You know, we're going to see these core people that we've already seen kind of stick around in NXT US. We may even see some other people that, haven't shown up yet from the UK roster show up over here in the US, until NXT Europe is officially debuted. I know they were talking about debuting it at some point in 2023, but 2023 is 12 months long. So, I'd say anybody that's still under contract and is, you know, in good standing with the company, is fair game to show up in the U.S. And kind of just to do something while they are they're waiting for NXT Europe to be launched. And then when NXT Europe is launched, it wouldn't surprise me if a lot of those UK guys go back. If all of them go back, I doubt it'll be all of them. I'm sure there's going to be, you know, guys and girls, but I'm sure there'll be a few of them that that stick around, you know, over here, whether it be in the main roster or still, you know, down in NXT. But but yeah, I like, you know, like you said, you know, Mako Satomura, I definitely think is going to be sticking around for a while. You know, Blair Davenport for sure. Gallus, definitely think Gallus will be around. Pretty Deadly, granted they already switched really, but you know, still I kind of think even after they switched to NXT US, I was still thinking of them as UK guys. So yeah, I mean, I definitely think there's going to be quite a bit of overlap, you know, with NXT UK talent over here, and then you know, when NXT Europe finally does launch, yeah, like I said, I think we're going to see a lot of those talent, you know, show up there. It would not surprise me if we see, you know, I know Gunther and Ludwig Kaiser have already talked about wanting to be involved with NXT Europe. Wouldn't surprise me if we see like even Sheamus or Finn Balor, you know, anybody that had, or Drew McIntyre for that matter, anybody that has ties to Europe on the main roster, I think they could certainly show up in NXT Europe for that star power and kind of to get eyes on that product. I feel like they're probably going to want to try and make it a bit of a bigger brand than NXT UK was, especially if it's going to be encompassing all of Europe. So it wouldn't be a bad idea in my mind to get, you know, like somebody like Finn Balor on the brand for, you know, even if it is just for two or three matches or something like that, just to get eyes on the product and get people watching and invested. So yeah.
All right, folks, that is our show. That was NXT. And yeah, I thought that I had something to call back to, but whatever it was, I didn't write it down, so I got no stinger for you here this week. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me on social media at Spooky Milk or at spookymilk.games, Nate.
I'm Nate Lindberg, and you can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I do the NXT hits and misses, which I do have up on pwtorch.com. If you'd like to check it out, what I thought of the show tonight, which I guess if you already listened to this, you already know what I thought of the show tonight, but still, it's there if you want to read it. I also am part of a side project on YouTube called Deej Time, DEGETIME, where we take a look at a therapeutic look at role-playing games. And I'm going to throw this out there. If you're in the Pennsylvania area, I am going to be taking a ride down to Pennsylvania between October 6th through 9th. There's a convention down there called Save Against Fear, put on by the Bodana Group. Save Against Fear is a convention that's geared towards using tabletop gaming as a therapeutic tool for children with autism or other learning disabilities. So I'm going to have a bit of a presence down there. And I am going to be running a Worldwide Wrestling RPG tournament. So if you guys are interested in playing that with me and you're in the Pennsylvania area, come on down, send me a DM, and we'll get it going.
And Bruce.
I'm Brucey Hazelwood. You can find me on Twitter at B_Lee253. My report is up at PW Torch and the VIP site. And the one thing we forgot to mention, Giovanni Vinci is no more as Imperium is back together.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
He done left. All right, folks. We're going to done left, too. And we will see you in 7. Cheers.
There's your senior.